Okay, Christianity is different than every other world religion because Christianity says that God actually did something in history. Other religions are very much about timeless truths or moral lessons or things like that that you can learn. But Christianity is very much about something that happened in history. And that means that we can check it historically. So, first question that we're going to ask is, can you trust the Gospels? Can you trust the Gospels? And when I was at school, certainly a lot of my friends gave me grief about believing in the Gospels because their idea was somebody made those up hundreds of years after Jesus was around. You know, these are fictions, they are made up, they're tall tales, they're myths, they're not serious history. All that does is it shows you how little my friends knew at school and how little I knew. I didn't really know how to respond to it. Certainly around about the start of the 20th century, going into the 1920s, 1930s, there were a few guys at universities pushing this idea. That's not what scholars think now. There's lots of reasons that people would have confidence in the Gospels now as at least containing some good information about Jesus. Now, I'm not talking about people who believe the Bible. I'm not talking about people who are ministers. I'm saying historians who are Jews, atheists from all different types of religion would say that the Bible contains some, at least some very good information about Jesus. Here's why we believe that now. We now know that memorization was a very, very important part of every child's education. In Israel, Jewish boys had to memorize quite a bit because writing was so expensive. You wrote on a huge scroll that was leather, that was massively expensive. You couldn't carry a dozen scrolls around with you to church every week. So what you did is you memorized. And you learned how to memorize texts forwards and backwards. You would have to listen to your teacher and repeat what he said. And that was just part of your education. We know that Jesus was a teacher and he taught in parables. And those parables are very, very easy to remember. So if you look, for example, at the Lord's Prayer, the first three parts are requests to God. The last three parts are requests for ourselves. If you look at the parable of the lost son or the parable of the sower, those are all extremely easy to remember. You may need to hear the parable of the Good Samaritan once or twice just to remember it. So it's very easy to remember a lot of the sayings of Jesus and a lot of the teachings of Jesus. And disciples were very common in the ancient world. There would have been a lot of disciples going around following teachers. There was nothing unusual in Jesus having disciples following him. He would have taught, they would have listened and remembered. They probably would have taken some notes. But those would have been maybe on little slabs, clay slates, maybe on bits of papyrus. They would have wasted very quickly. It was memorization that was key. We also know in the Bible that eyewitnesses were extremely important. Eyewitnesses were extraordinarily important. In lots of the letters which are collected in the New Testament, the author is always saying, listen, you can believe us because we were an eyewitness to Jesus. We know that at the start of Luke's Gospel. Luke says, you can trust me, Theophilus, that's the guy Luke's Gospel is written to, because I spoke to eyewitnesses. I went and I looked at eyewitnesses. I spoke to eyewitnesses. I spoke to people who were there. A guy called Papias, who was writing maybe 30 years after the Gospels were written, was still talking about the importance of eyewitnesses. So eyewitnesses were extremely important in the early church. We also know that there were little document sources that were written down before the Gospels were written. And we can even see that Pardon?
All right, no problem. Sorry.
That's okay, no problem.
We know that, for example, Matthew used Mark as a source. We can see that, and Luke used Mark as a source. We can see that there's verses in Luke and Matthew that are practically copied word from Mark. Now, that's not surprising because the early church believed that Peter was behind Mark's gospel. Matter of fact, it does seem that Peter was the guy who told Mark a lot of his information. This is information you'd want to get right. But here's the interesting thing. when they got a written source, they copied it carefully. Matthew and Luke stick really, really close to Mark. They don't add a lot of information all over the place. Sometimes it's word for word. So when they got these written sources, they used them carefully. So we know that the early church was very, very, very careful with eyewitnesses and documents. Luke mentions that there were documents that he went to. Not just Mark's gospel, certainly not Matthew's gospel. We don't think Luke had a copy of that in front of him, but he probably had a copy of Mark, and he used other documents, and the evidence is he used them carefully. So the importance of eyewitnesses, the importance of documents. And then you begin to get to the gospels and you say, do these books look like they were made up? Do they look like fairy stories? Do they look like myths? Well, no, they don't. One reason we know that is the more history you study of the time, the better you understand the Gospels. For example, you've all heard of the little tax collector Zacchaeus who climbed a tree. He lived in Jericho. Well, the only reason that you would have a tax collector in Jericho is because at the time when Jesus was alive, that was right on the border between two of the territories ruled by Herod's sons, Herod Antipas, Herod Philip. After Jesus' death and resurrection, that stopped happening. There wouldn't have been a tax collector there except when Jesus was alive. Yet the Gospels record there was a tax collector in Jericho called Zacchaeus. So whoever wrote that knew what life was like at the time, knew that there would be tax collectors in Jericho. There's not a little saying Jesus has in the Gospels which says, you know, Jesus talks about John the Baptist and says, listen, what did you go and did you go to look for a reed blown about in the wind? Well, that was in the coins that the Herods used, and people believed that they were weak. So whoever wrote the Gospels knew the period and knew the time. But when you get into the Gospels, they just don't look like they were made up because they contain lots of information that if you were inventing the Gospels, you would have left out. The disciples look stupid a lot of the time. Jesus is continually turning around to the disciples and saying, how could you be so stupid? The disciples let Jesus down. The disciples are cowardly. And these are the men who were ruling the early church. These were the men who were running the first churches. If you were inventing stories, you would invent how great these guys were. But instead, they look stupid. There are statements and sayings in the Bible that are actually very difficult for Christians to understand. For example, Jesus turns to a rich young ruler and says, why do you call me God? Good, there is none good but God. Why do you call me good? There's none good but God, because this man had called him good teacher. It's a strange thing for Jesus to say in the early church who believed Jesus was God. So why include that unless it actually happened? There's all sorts of information in the Bible where Jesus tells people what to do when they go to the temple. Now that's important for this reason. When the Gospels were written down, the temple had been destroyed. Why would you make up information telling Christians what to do in the temple after the temple had been destroyed? There's no point in that. We can also go to Paul's letters. Paul shows a lot of knowledge of Jesus' life, of Jesus' teachings. And Paul was definitely writing long before the Gospels were written. So within 30 years, Gospel of Mark was written in 30 years. Other Gospels were written about 40 years after that. What you certainly get is this picture that the Gospels are reliable. They contain reliable information about Jesus. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at the resurrection. Now, this is the interesting part. Did the resurrection really happen? What does history have to say about that? First thing you have to understand is the importance of crucifixion. We tend to think of crucifixion as a really, really, really painful death. It's torture. That's the way we think about it. Now, basically crucifixion is a way of basically exhausting a person to death. You tie them up in a pole. You guys maybe think of it in terms of people being bled to death. It wasn't bleeding so much as sheer exhaustion. Sometimes they just tied a crucified man up with his arms held out so it was difficult to breathe. And what happened is the man was crucified to death. He was exhausted to death when he was crucified. But the thing about crucifixion is that you were held up for everybody to see. You were naked usually. You were beaten. You were broken. And it was shame that people were worried about. It was humiliating. It was disgusting. The Romans actually considered the word crucifixion to be a dirty word. It was a bad word. It was the most filthy, disgusting way to die. And it was Rome's way of showing, we are in total control of you. We own you. We own your bodies. We will do whatever we want to them. The other thing that you guys will find it difficult to wrap your heads around is that we tend to think if somebody gets punished for a crime, it's their fault. Back then, if you got punished for a crime, it was your family's fault. It was your friend's fault. And your fault, too. It was all of you together. So Jesus' disciples were followers of a crucified man. That was as disgusting and as shameful as it got. Now, in Jesus' day, there were a number of different guys came along and said, listen, we're going to lead Israel to freedom. We're going to get rid of the Romans. We're going to fight you. One guy said, I'm going to part the rivers in the Jordan and lead everybody to freedom. Another guy said, I'm going to make the walls of Jerusalem fall down. They went out to perform their miracle. When they got there, the Romans came along and killed them before they could even open their mouths. There were other guys who got armies behind them, tried to fight the Romans. They got beat. One was taken to Rome, had a little clamp put around his neck in front of a crowd. They twisted the clamp round till he strangled, dead. His movement's over. Yet in the case of Jesus Christ, that didn't happen. He's the only guy who comes forward and says, listen, I'm God's king. He gets killed by the Romans. His followers would have been depressed, despairing, and yet, within 3 days, these guys are preaching Jesus again. They're saying this guy is God's son. They're saying that this guy is Israel's true king. Now, something had to happen to change their minds. When Jesus was crucified, they might have believed something like, yes, Jesus was meant to be Israel's true Messiah, but we messed up, we were too sinful for him, so God allowed him to be crucified. But it's over. Soon as the Romans crucified Jesus, everybody should have thought, it's over, guys, time to go home. We're lost. Yet within a short space of time, now absolutely every historian has agreed on this, something had to happen to change the disciples from defeated into people who actually preached that not only was Jesus innocent, but he was actually Israel's true king and God's son. Even though he'd been crucified. So the question is, what happened? Well, the disciples said that Jesus had been raised from the dead. Jesus had been raised from the dead. Jesus had been resurrected. Now, that word resurrected is actually really very interesting. We're going to come back to that. All four Gospels, Book of Acts, they all agree one fact. On Easter morning, the tomb was empty. When the disciples went to look for the tomb was empty. And they all agree that the disciples claimed they have seen Jesus alive again. On the emptiness of the tomb, the really interesting thing is, first of all, if you were making a story up, you would not have made up that women found that tomb. Women were considered to be weaker than men. They were considered to be not very clever, and their word was no good in a court of law. Their word was absolutely no good at all in a court of law. You would never have invented women discovering the tomb. You also would never have done this. The Gospels actually tell people where the tomb was. The people say, listen, his tomb was Joseph of Arimathea's tomb. Joseph of Arimathea was a member of the Sanhedrin. That was like the Jewish parliament. So basically what they were doing is they're saying, Jesus' tomb was empty. By the way, here's the address. They were making it easy for people to go and check. If you were inventing the story of an empty tomb, you'd have said, oh, right, you know, they buried him out in the desert, and when we went 3 days later to look at the hole in the desert, he was gone. But they didn't. They made it easy to check their story. If anyone didn't believe them, they were saying, go ahead, guys, check. Joseph of Arimathea's tomb. The other interesting thing is that they were actually making it really, really easy. And this is the fact in my head that's so difficult to get around if you don't believe Jesus rose from the dead. The Jewish authorities wanted Jesus' movement gone. The Romans agreed with them. They wanted Jesus' movement gone. Within a short space of time, even though you've crucified this man, people are still preaching at him. And they're saying that this man came back from the dead, that his body's alive again. The easiest way to have ended Christianity would have been to say, right, we'll go to the tomb, we'll open the tomb, look, there's his dead body, they're telling lies. But we know they didn't do that. We know they didn't do that for two reasons. One, Christianity survived in Jerusalem. People were Christians in Jerusalem. If they were saying there's an empty tomb in Jerusalem that proves that Jesus is alive, and it wasn't there, Christianity would not have got started. Nobody would have followed Jesus. It would have been so easy to prove the disciples were lying. But secondly, the Gospels have to answer a charge that the Jewish authorities made against the Christians. They said the disciples stole the body. The book of Matthew includes that. It says, listen, the disciples stole the body. That's how the Jewish authorities argued the tomb was empty. And that shows us that they agreed that the tomb was empty. Jesus' enemies and his friends were both agreed that tomb is empty. And that was obviously a big story at the time, because Matthew would not have included that response in his gospel unless he had to. The only people who stole bodies were witches. Basically, the disciples were being accused of witchcraft. Yet, Jesus' enemies and his friends were both agreed that the tomb was empty. So we've got an empty tomb, but that's not all that we have. We also have the appearances. Jesus' disciples were absolutely convinced that they had seen Jesus, and here's the key thing, resurrected. If you've seen me reversed over by a tractor, and 3 days later you seen me walk into your room, you would have said, I seen his ghost. If you were really, really religious, you might say, I had a vision of Mr. Veal. I had a vision of Mr. Veal come down from heaven to tell me that everything's all right. But the disciples didn't say that. They said he was resurrected. That meant his body was alive again. Resurrection is what God was going to do to everybody's body at the end of time in the last judgment. Nobody was expecting a resurrection in the middle of time. Nobody. Now, there's a difference between being resurrected and being brought back to life. Jesus brought people back to life, like Lazarus. Like the widow of Nain's son. But here's the thing. Lazarus was going to die again. Lazarus was going to get old and die. But if you were resurrected, you were never going to die. Only people who were on God's side were going to be resurrected. Nobody was expecting this to happen until the last day, judgment day. Yet here they are, the disciples, saying, we met Jesus and he was resurrected. They're saying, we actually met him and we found his body. If it was only a vision or an experience of Jesus' love, or if they all got together and told nice stories about Jesus and felt, oh, Jesus is still alive in our hearts, they would have said, we had a vision of Jesus. Or they would have said, Jesus is alive in our hearts. That's not what they said. They said, we seen Jesus resurrected. Something had to happen to convince those guys that not only was Jesus alive, Jesus was resurrected. So there's very powerful testimony there from Jesus' disciples. And these guys are not going to make this story up. They were persecuted for their beliefs. Some of them were killed for their beliefs. James, Jesus' brother, was stoned to death for believing that Jesus was alive again. They were absolutely convinced this was true. You're not going to steal a body, make up a story, and die for that. Not everyone. Finally, we come to this guy, the Apostle Paul. What's interesting is that it wasn't just Jesus' followers who seen him alive again. Some of his enemies seen him alive again too. His brother James, for example, in the Gospels, came and told Jesus, listen, you've got to stop this preaching. You're making fools of our family. In the Gospels, Jesus' family, including James's brother, said, listen, we think our brother is nuts. We think Jesus is nuts, the things he's saying. We think he's lost control of his mind. Now, again, that's one of those embarrassing details that the Gospels include that you would only include if it was true. But we know that James was one of Jesus' enemies. Yet something happened to change James from a Jesus' enemy into his follower after his crucifixion, when Jesus would have brought even more shame in James' family. And Paul, in his letter to the 1 Corinthians, says James seen Jesus resurrected. So there's one enemy of Jesus who seen him resurrected, but in other words, the same guy, Paul, Saul of Tarsus, Pharisee, he believed in the law. He believed that in resurrections, he believed that one day everybody would be resurrected from the dead. Paul did not believe that you died and became a ghost or died and became an angel. You died, you went into the grave, you came out on Judgment Day resurrected. Paul was prepared to kill people because they were saying that Israel's true Messiah had been crucified. That was disgusting to Paul. That was horrific to Paul. How dare anybody say that God's Son was crucified? How dare anybody say that God's Son, that God's Messiah, was crucified? And he was prepared to kill people for that. Yet something happened to change Paul's mind. Paul had a vision, he makes this clear in his letters, as in Acts as well, that on the Damascus road, he seen Jesus. He went to Jerusalem to check the facts. And there he got the stories from the disciples saying, yes, you're right. He's resurrected and he's alive again. So here's the main points. What changed Paul on the Damascus road? What transformed the disciples from doubt and defeat to a faith that they would die for? What convinced the disciples that they had seen Jesus alive from the grave? Not a vision, not a religious experience. What convinced them that they had seen a resurrection? Why could no one produce the dead body of Jesus? And why did the early church make it so easy to find the burial place? Why was the tomb empty on Easter morning? What happened to the body? What happened to that body? When you put all of those facts together, something had to happen to change the disciples. The tomb was empty. The disciples claim that God raised Jesus from the dead. The only explanation left is that the disciples got it right. Jesus really did rise from the dead.